Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kaf Kedemot Aleph, three lines down. The Gemara yesterday left off with Rabbi Bar Chana bringing two versions of what Rabbi Yochanan had said. Either kol makeh shemechallelim elav et Shabbat ein mitrapim mehen, anything that you would violate the Shabbat for, you would not get medical attention from them. Or kol makah, that is a makat chalal, loosely we'll say is an internal injury. The Baal Tosafot say anything around the trunk of the body. Then that makah shel chalal, you also do not get treatment from them. The basic idea is anything that is sakana nefashot, you can't get treatment from them. The Gemara said, ma'ika beinayu, what is the nafkamina between them? The Gemara said, gavayad v'gav haregel, it was on the top of the hand, the top of the foot, where we would be mechalal Shabbat, because there is sakana nefashot involved with it. On the other hand, it's not a makah shel chalal, it's an external injury. It's on the extremities, it's not in the trunk of the body. It's also something that, as Rashi notes, you could watch or see if he put some sort of salve on it, what was happening, and then you could remove it if necessary. So for those reasons, you are Mechalal Shabbat, but it's not called a Makash El Chalal, and that would be a nafkamina between these two reasons that we mentioned before. Now the Baal Tosafot point out that there are other nafkaminot that you could have brought over here, and the Baal Tosafot say, Huadin, that you could have brought these other nafkamino to happen to bring this one. You could argue that it was this one intentionally because of what Rashi argued, which is that here you have visibility as to what's happening, and therefore it's something that you can manage. And that's why you would be allowed to seek medical attention from that. Baal HaTosafot also pointed out that this is a choli lasham me'alav. It's a growth that came out by itself. O shelo yedei makat cherev, or it wasn't done by the cut of a sword. It's not an injury where there was a cut that happened, which we'll see later today, has a status of makat chalal. Rather, it was something that was an outgrowth, or something that came either painful or that was growing out of his hand. And that's the makat that we're speaking about here on the gavayad v'gavaregel. So now, ikam inayu gavayad v'gavaregel, the amar avadar v'matna amarav, gavayad v'gavaregel, harehin ke makat shel chalal. They are the equivalent, or they have the status of a makash shel chalal, u'mechalalin alei at Shabbat, and we mechalal Shabbat for it, and that's what makes the nafkamina between the two reasons. The one who says you mechalal Shabbat, then you can't seek medical attention for this. The one who says that makat chalal, it is kim makat chalal, but it's not a makah of chalal, and therefore you would be able to seek medical attention from them. Amrav zutra batuv yamrav, ko makash tzricha umed, Michalalina Aleha et Shabbat. Any makah which you have to assess, or you are considering whether it is a sakana or not a sakana, that's the way Rashi reads it, then it's considered or classified as a makat chalal, in Michalalina Aleha et Shabbat. Or in essence, what it's saying is that anything that is a safek sakana, then Michalalina Aleha Shabbat. Now that seems to be obvious because the Gemara in other places makes that statement. Why does it phrase it here as anything that needs omed? So if you actually look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, you'll see there was an alternate girsa, and that actually would help the reading over here, which is, V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, makash shel chalal, eina tzricha omed, that any makash shel chalal needs no assessment. We automatically assume that that is sakanat nefashot, and therefore we are mechalel Shabbat. We don't have to take anything else into consideration. The mere fact that it is a makash shel chalal makes it into something that we be mechalel Shabbat. And then the remainder of the Gemara would flow a little easier if you read it that way. And that is also the Bach's Girso over here. Again, Rashi sees it as a separate din, and the Girso that we have in our Gemara is that it's a separate din. If you need Omed, if you need assessment whether to know or not, that makes it already a safek sakanat nefashot, and then you can be Mkalela to Shabbat. The Ritva does bring a third interpretation, which is, this is a case when there are no doctors there, and the Chola is not communicating with us. So now here, we as lay people around this choleh are trying to assess the situation. If we assess, or in our assessment, we see that this individual looks like they're sakana, then you are mechalil and aleihat Shabbat. So there are three different ways to view what this means. Amar Rav Shemin ba'av Amar Rav Yochanan, vai ishta tzmirta kemakash shel chalal dami. This heavy fever, or this strong fever that one has, that is the equivalent of a makash shel chalal. And you would be mechalel on it the Shabbat. That would be the idea if you use the Rabbeinu Chananel's girsa, that you had a statement which says that any makash shel chalal requires no omed. That's automatically mechalel at the Shabbat. And now we have a list of items where the Gemara says they have the same status as a makash shel chalal, even though they're not internal injuries, or for the Baal HaTosafot, they're not on the trunk of the body. But nevertheless, they take on the status like a makashel kalau. And one of those, for instance, is the ishta tzmirta, which is this heavy fever that the individual has. So now the Gemara asks, Meheichan makashel kalau. Where does the makashel kalau begin? Peirush Rabbi Ami, min asafa vilifnim. From your lips and inward. Lips and inward means that's the areas of your body that are considered to be internal. So the chalal would be an internal injury. Most focus on the internal organs or the area of the trunk of the body. The Baal Tosafot bring from the Yerushalmi that even if it's a hit on the external side where the organs are, that could still be the equivalent of a makah shel chalal. Bai Rabbi Elazar, kache vishine mai. What's the status of Rashi throughout Shas translates kache vishine as gums and teeth, whereas the Baal Tosafot all over Shas argue on Rashi and translate kache vishine as being your incisors and your molars, just the two sets of teeth that we're speaking about. Mai, what's the din with regard to these items? Kevin de akushe nenu kimaka divrei damu. Since they are solid items, they have the status of being an external wound because your teeth are hard and maybe even the gums, which have bone underneath them. Those areas are more solid, so they're not classified as an internal injury. Odilma, kevin de gavai, kaimi, they where they're placed is inside the mouth, so they're already considered to be internal. Kamakasho kalau damu. They have the status of an internal injury. Amar Abaye, tashma, hachoshesh bishinav, person who is worried about his teeth, lo yigamei behem et hachometz, one cannot gargle or swallow vinegar on Shabbat. Chometz or vinegar in general, people don't drink plain. So if you're drinking chometz, it's very clear that you're drinking it for its medicinal purposes, and we're not allowed to perform medicinal cures on Shabbat because of the fear of shchikat smamanim, which is that you'll crush the medicines, or you'll make the medicines on Shabbat. For that reason, we avoid taking anything that is medicinal on Shabbat, and chometz would be in that category. People might dip their bread in chometz. They might put chometz in their salad dressing, but they don't drink it plain. So if you do it in a way that it's not obvious that you are drinking it for medicinal purposes, that would be permitted on Shabbat. If you eat it, and it happens to provide medicinal purposes, that would be fine. But over here, where you're drinking it, where even be questionable whether you have to make a brocha on the chometz that you're drinking because it's not something that's normally consumed by individuals, then we would not allow it because it is an obvious medicinal purpose on Shabbat. Now he makes a deal out of this. Achosheshu dolo. It's only because he feels some sort of pain, some small irritation. Hakeev leituva. If it was really painful, shapir dami. We would allow it. It seems to be that the only reason we don't allow you to do this is because of the fact that it's a lighter form of problem. If it was a heavier problem, we would permit it. So the Gemara says, Dilmatana, Eichi Dekoyiv Leituva, Choshesh Nami Korile. How do you know what Choshesh means in the Tana? Maybe when you have a lot of pain, he also calls that Choshesh. Choshesh means you're worried. The question is, what's causing that worry? And we don't know the threshold of pain that causes that worry, so you can't prove anything from the Tana. It might be that this Tana believes that a lot of pain is also called Choshesh. So Tashma, we have another incident which is found in the Gemara in Yoma. Rabbi Yochanan Chash Betzafdino. Rabbi Yochanan had what people seem to call here scurvy, which is a large deficiency in vitamin C, which is known to happen, I think, to sailors or people who are at sea because they don't have enough vitamin C. And therefore, they get problems with their gums. And we'll see here that that's a description of what's going on here. Also, the Gabu Hayimotunita, he went to this matron, Avdo Chamsho Malish Avdo. She provided him a cure on Thursday and Friday, Erev Shabbat. Amarla Lamachar Mai. Tomorrow, what do I do? Because I have to give Shiurim tomorrow. I'm not going to be able to make it over to you. Amarla Lotzarich. You don't need it anymore. Thursday and Friday is sufficient. Itzarich Na Mai. So what if I do need it, what can I do? Because I'm not going to be able to make it back to you. Amra Ishtabali. Take a shvua that you will not reveal the secret ingredients that I have for the treating of this scurvy. Ishtabala lalaka liyisrael lo magilina. She took a shvua to the God of Israel that he will not reveal it. Galia le. She revealed him the potion or whatever secret salve she had to put on the scurvy. The machar nafak darsha bepirka. The next day he went out and was doration at the public shiur in front of the whole am. Wait a minute, how could he do that? He took a shvua that he would not reveal the information. Well, the Gemara says you can make a deal in how he did it. He took a shua leloka Yisrael lo maglina aval ame Yisrael maglina. He didn't take a shua be'eloka Yisrael in the name of God. He took a shua that he would not reveal it to the God of Israel. On the other hand, he would reveal it to the nation of Israel. So it was a play in his words, where it says, Vayikach Chilul Hashem. Okay, that's a nice explanation, but what about the Chilul Hashem that derives from this? It's clear here that she thought he was taking a Shavua, and if he goes and reveals it, it's as if he's abrogating that Shavua. The Galila Mi'ikara, this, the Gemara answers the same thing in Yoma. To me, it's difficult there, it's difficult over here, is that he disclosed it to her originally. He told her that the shvuah that he took wasn't really a shvuah, and therefore he was going to reveal it. Not sure why that solves the problem, because you still have the problem that he took a shvuah, got her to disclose the information, and then he tells her that the shvuah he took wasn't real. So now she knows he's going to disclose it, but still he used it as a way to trick her into disclosing the information. To me, it would be a chilul Hashem. Nevertheless, the Gemara thinks that if you disclose it to her, then that's not a chilul Hashem, because she knows or understands why you're disclosing it, and you're explaining the methodology that you used. And because of that, it wouldn't be a Chilul Hashem. To me, it seems like it would definitely be a Chilul Hashem. The Yushalmi actually has a version of the story, which has two endings to it. One ending is that the woman committed suicide, and the other ending is that she converted to Judaism. So the one side, we could say that maybe it was a Chilul Hashem, which is that the woman committed suicide because she had lost her whole business and her whole secret over here. The other side is that she saw how dedicated Rabbi Yochanan was to Am Yisrael, that he's willing to use these means to get the benefit of Bnei Yisrael, and therefore she converted. So that would be a positive side of it. Maybe even those two sides are trying to deal with the Chilul Hashem that was involved over here, whether it really was or wasn't a Chilul Hashem in the end. Alma kemakah shel chalal damya. You see here that it is a makah shel chalal, because we're talking about scurvy, which is a disease of the gums. We're speaking about something that's internal to the mouth, and this is why Rashi likely spoke about gums and teeth, and not teeth and molars. You can see the same thing in the Rabbeinu Kananel. There's kache shine dari basar shel gabi ha-shinayim. So he says that's the basar, the flesh that's on top of the teeth, which would be referring to the gums as well. And that's because this disease involves the gums, and we'll see that from the cures that are going to come up in a second. But what you see from Rabbi Yochanan is that he was willing to treat this on Shabbat. He took the ingredients in case he needed to do it on Shabbat. That means that he thought it was significant enough or serious enough that he would have treated it on Shabbat. And therefore, you prove from here that anything internal, including things in the mouth, have a din of a makash shel chalal. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, shiny tzavdina, ho matchil bepeh, vegomer bebnei me'ayim. It's different, scurvy, or whatever disease we're speaking about here, it's different because it spreads. It starts in the mouth, but then it enters into the intestines. It spreads. So it in itself may not have been a makash shel chalal. The danger of the makash shel chalal is if it goes untreated, then it will enter into the intestines and become a makash shel chalal. So obviously something that will, in the end, be a makash shel chalal, it has the same status as a makash shel chalal with regards to Shabbat. Because if left untreated, you may end up in a situation where you can't reverse it. My simanei. What are the symptoms that would indicate that a person has this disease? Rami mide bekachi umaiti damo mime dari. You put anything on the teeth, and all of a sudden dam comes out between the rows of the teeth. Blood comes out, and that means that your gums bleed very easily. So anybody who has anything in their mouth, and all of a sudden blood starts to emerge from between the teeth, again, that their gums are very, very sensitive, that's a good indication that you have this disease. May my havi, what causes it? Mikrire krire dechite, that is eating cold wheat during the winter time. Omichami chamime desare, and eating hot barley during the summertime. Omishure kasa deharsana, and eating the leftovers of the fish hash and flour dish. So all of these items are problematic, not because they cause the disease, because they lack the vitamins or the items that you need in order to prevent the disease. These are heavy caloric and carbohydrate type of diets, and they lack the fruits or vegetables that might give the person the vitamin C that they need. And so therefore they're going to end up with scurvy. So that's the problem. It's caused by this because this person's eating in a way that does not provide them the items that would have prevented the scurvy from happening. I'm not sure that they understood that completely, But they knew that people who had these types of diets ended up having the problem. And that's because these are diets that are very filling, probably the diet of people who are poorer in some senses, and people who are out at sea. And therefore, they ended up with the problem because they have a deficiency in the vitamin that they need. My Abdalay, what did this woman provide to Rabbi Yochanan that was the cure for it? Am Rav Acha Brei Derova, mei, seor, leavened water, shemen zayit, and olive oil, umelach, and salt. Pretty straightforward type of cure. Umar bar Rav Ashi amar, mishka da avza, begatfo da avza. The oil or the fat that comes from a goose. Now Rashi over here says begatfo da avza means that you use the quill of the goose as an applicator to put the fat on the gums in order to be a salve for the gums. Although if you can see here, the Masorah Shas tells you already to go look in the Gemara in Yoma. Rashi gives a different explanation where he says that it is the fats of the goose. And then when he says about the quill from the goose, it means the marrow of the area near the arm or the wing of the goose. So it's both the marrow and the fat of the goose that you apply. Amar Abaye, ane avde kulhu, v'lo yitzai, says I tried both of these solutions and didn't work. Adam arli ha'utaya, till I got some information from one of these merchants. Aiti kashiyata dezeta, delo mali tilta, bring a pit of an olive that is not a third ripened. Vikalanu amara charato, and then you should roast it on a new spade or a new hoe. Vidavik bay didari, and then place it on the teeth or on the gums. Avde ochi vitzai. He did that, and it worked. So here's the third solution or third salve that is used. Rabbi Yochanan echi avid ochi. So now the Gemara gets back to the question, which is, how did Rabbi Yochanan engage in this activity to go to this matronita to get this medical attention? V'amar Rabba Barchanam Rabbi Yochanan. Isn't Rabbi Yochanan the author of the position called Makah? Shemichalin alayat ha-Shabbat, ein mitrafim him. Any Makah that you would be Michalel Shabbat, you're not allowed to get any cure from them. And even if you use the other version of Rabbi Yochanan, it's called Makash al Chalal, is problematic to get attention from them. Over here, we already determined that it's a Makash al Chalal, and it is something that you would be Mechalel Shabbat for. So given both of those items, how is it possible that he sought medical attention from this woman, given the severity of the problem, and given his memra that we finished off yesterday's daf with? Adam Chashuv Shaini. He was a person with political clout. He was someone who had connections to the government. And therefore you have the problem of mirta, which is that this person's too scared to do something problematic because then the government officials would intervene and the person would be in trouble with the government. He had too much standing. He was not an anonymous person that was showing up that nobody cared about. This was someone who had these connections and had clout within the political echelons of Rome. And that meant they would intervene and this person would be in trouble. That type of mirta makes it that we assume they're going to treat properly in those cases. And again, this is a professional, we'll call her at this time, and someone known to the authorities. And therefore, him going in as an Adam Chashuv would protect him. Vai Rabbi Abahu, Dadam Chashuv Hava. What about Rabbi Abahu, who's also an important person? We saw earlier on in the Masechta that he was amongst the politically connected in Rome. We have in other places that the Shvachot of the Beit Kesar used to sing praises to Rabbi Abahu. So we know that he's well connected politically, and he has political clout. V'ramile Yaakov Mina Sama Ashaket. And Yaakov Mina placed some sort of salve on his thighs. V'ilo Rabbi Ami Rabbi Asi, the Lachaku the Shakye. If it were not for the fact that Rabbi Ami Rabbi Asi licked off or sucked off the salve that he had on his thigh, Paske the Shakye, his thighs would have fallen off or he would have lost his legs, meaning that it was a serious problem. What it seems like from here is that he had an open wound and that this individual provided a salve to be put on the wound. The salve included some sort of poison in it that would have entered into his bloodstream because it was on an open wound. And that was the intent of this Yaakov Mina, was to hurt Rabbi Abahu. So Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi came and they sucked it out. I mean, they pulled it, equivalent of maybe mitzitza bape in some ways, but they sucked it out, and they were able to remove the salve or the poison. Because many poisons are only effective when they enter into the bloodstream, They're not effective when you swallow the poisons, because then the digestive system breaks them down and they never enter the bloodstream in a way that they would hurt you. So that's true of some of the venoms of snake. A venomous snake, when they bite and it enters directly into the bloodstream, there it causes a problem. On the other hand, if it was swallowed, it may not cause a problem. It's not true by all, but some of them are that way. So their sucking it off was able to protect him and take it out of his bloodstream, but it did not affect them because they were swallowing it and not being exposed directly to it. Now over here, Yaakov Mino, Yaakov the Min, sounds awfully similar to the individual we bumped into yesterday, which was Yaakov Ish Kfar Tzachanyo, who was also a Min. But the Balei Tosafot back on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph point out that that cannot be the case. He says that the one we bumped into yesterday with Ben Damo, and the one that we bumped into on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph with Rabbi Lezer Ben Hurkunus, those two were the same Yaakov, Yaakov Ish Kfar Tzachanyo, who was a Talmid of Yeshua Notzri, and that's what we spoke about yesterday, that he was bringing the cure through his Rebbe, or he wanted to use his Rebbe's name in order to bring about the cure, and that's why the Balei Tosafot said that Rabbi Shmuel objected vehemently to him doing this because of that problem of Minut. That would also explain why Rabbi Shmuel, despite the fact that it was a chashash midrabanan, that the person might be pulled into Minut, that we still would object even over Sakanat Nefeshot. So we mentioned yesterday it might have been a din derabanan and they were holding it even so because of the problem of Minut. But if you say, like the Balei Tosafot, that it had to do with the fact that he was using an incantation that involved Jesus' name or involved something about his religion, then it would be a direct use of Avodah Zarah or a Minut in order to solve the problem, and that would be problematic. And that's why Rabbi Shmuel refused to allow him to do it, especially since it was in public. And Rabbi Shmuel, l'shitato, says that anything in public would not be allowed. Over here, the Balei Tosafot say that he couldn't have lived that long. Rabbi Abbo is far after the time period of Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkunus and Ben Dama and Rabbi Yishmael, and therefore it has to be a different Yaakov Mino. That's what the Balei Tosafot say back on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, even though the Gemara calls them both Yaakov and calls them a Min. Nevertheless, he says that the fact one is called Ish Kfar Tzachanyo and one is called Yaakov Mino probably indicates that they were different people, and just given the different periods of time in which they are discussing, he says unlikely that he ever lived that long. It would have been a very long time. And therefore he thinks it's a different individual over here. So now, if it's Adam Choshev is shiny, how come Rabbi Abbo wasn't protected by the fact that he was politically connected? And therefore Yaakov Mino would have been afraid to do anything that would have hurt Rabbi Abbo. The answer is, shiny Rabbi Abbo, the mukmei bei minei benafshayu. The Minim were after him with a vengeance, because he used to debate them in the Psukim, and he was very successful at winning the debates and ruining it for the Minim. So again, if this is the period of the early Christians, it would make sense that the Minim were debating the Jews. Again, they were a very proselytizing religion, and therefore they were reaching out and trying to convince others to convert, and that might have to do with the statement that we saw yesterday in the Gemara, that shiny Minu, the Mashkate, the Mimshach Batrayu, you get pulled after it a lot, because over there they're trying very hard to convert individuals, to bring people into their faith. And if you provide a solution that involves their faith, then it's very likely that these people are going to be drawn into the faith. So he was debating them, and he was succeeding at pushing back against their proselytizing, and therefore they were after him with a vengeance. And he says, Yaakov Mina says, Tamut Nafshi Im Plishtim, which is the statement that Shimshon makes when he prays to God to take down the temple of the Plishtim, where he says, I'm going to die, but in my death, I'm going to take down the whole Plishtim temple and all the people here. And he ended up killing more in his death than he did in his lifetime. But in a sense, it's a suicide mission. And that's what he was doing over here. Yaakov Mina was willing to sacrifice himself in order to get rid of Rabbi Abbo. So the normal dinim of Mirtat and Adam Choshev Shani didn't apply to him because of Rabbi Abbo's tension with the Minim. So now the Gemara is going to take a slight diversion. Part of it starts out because of the Gemara speaking about what is classified as a Makash Shel Chalal, or what you're allowed to be Mechalel Shabbat for, and that will be the first items that come up. And then the Gemara will get deep into medicinal cures that are provided by the Gemara, and that'll take us on that tangent through some medicinal cures. I'll say what I say every time we get involved in these issues. We have it in the Gemara in Shabbat. We have it here, and we have it also in the Gemara in Nikudin, that the Gemara comes up with medicinal cures. The Rishonim in general have three different approaches to this. Some Rishonim accept whatever the Gemara is saying and think that they are efficacious in these medicinal cures. You have some Rishonim who say that it was the medicine of the time, and therefore we don't have to pay attention to it, and we can come up with our own or whatever the medicine is of our time. That the Rambam does heavily. He does not quote any of these solutions that the Gemara brings, and brings his own solutions to the problems. And then you have others who take it more allegorically. And there's probably a mix of all of these items over here. Some of them, like we just saw before, with regards to the Koli of Safdina, which likely was scurvy, that the things that they're trying to do in order to solve it, as well as the things that are causing it, they're on the right track, even though they don't have the understanding or depth of understanding that we do about the problem. In other cases, the solutions seem far-fetched, and therefore maybe they're more allegorical. And this is probably a mix of different items that are brought together in a single Gemara that's dealing with a topic of medicinal cures. So now, Amar Shmuel, hi Padato. So this open wound, the way Rashi explains it over here, it's Makat Cherev, that it is a wound that was caused by some sort of weapon or something cutting the body, so you have an open wound. Sakantohi, that is something that is life-threatening. Umichalin aleha ta Shabbat, one is permitted to violate the Shabbat in order to take care of it. Ma'isuta mifsak dama, what is the cure, what is the solution to stop the bleeding? So that's tachle bechalo, that is cress inside of vinegar. The way Rashi describes it over here is that you drink the cress with the chometz, with the vinegar in it, and that stops the bleeding. But if you look up in the Bali Tosavot, they quote, which I think is from the Rashbam, V'yesh mishur farshim lasum ala makah. It is a salve that you put on the wound. It's not something that you swallow, but it's rather something that you put on the wound in order to stop the bleeding. And that might be true, because the vinegar would be an astringent of sorts, and that would have helped to stop the bleeding. Lasuke, if you want to have the wound not only stop bleeding, but you want it to start healing, which is that you want the flesh to start growing back over it, what do? Garda diavlo. So you take scrapings of the cynodone, which is a type of wild grass. So it's the shavings of that wild grass. The girda de asno, and then shavings of the snap, which is of the brambles or the thorn bush. O nikra mikilkata. Or, instead of those items, you can take, Rashi calls it a worm, for where the birds or the chickens are picking up their food, where they pick out the worms from. That type of worm would be helpful. Although if you look in the Rabbeinu Hananel, Perush, with regards to this wound that we're speaking about here, Petza, Kedemar, it's Petza Pid'ah, Pid'ah is a wound. Perush, Gerda Diavla, Gridum Shigordot, Mi'esef, Shinikra Chatzav, B'lashon Rabbanan. That's the chatzav that the Rabbanan speak about that they used to plant in order to demarcate the borders. It's the type of tall, wild grass that they used. And it's the shavings from the root or the base of that esef. Nikra mikilkalata is katicha shel rei min ashpa. That is some sort of dung from the garbage dump. As opposed to what Rashi says, that it's a worm that you put here. So this is some item that you would put on top of the wound, and that would help it to start to heal, rather than just remain as a scab. Amar of Safra, hi invito. So over here, it's not clear what this invito is. It's anav, is a berry or a grape. So the assumption, you can see this in the Rabbeinu Hananel as well. He says, berish invito, mursa, shetzumcha babasar. It is pus, shetzumcha babasar, bnei adam kamo anava. It's like some sort of growth that appears on the individual that has pus inside of it. Parvanka de malacha de mavta. That is the forerunner. That is the indication or the harbinger, precursor to the malacha mavet. And the Rabbeinu Hananel on the next amud says that perish parvanka shaliach. It's a messenger or a symptom of maya suta. What is the medicinal solution to this? Tinga bedufsha. Rashi says that's rue inside of honey. O karpasa betilya. Parsley inside of, Rashi calls it strong wine, although the Bali Tosafot bring down that betilya in other places is meant to mean weak wine. So it's parsley and wine together. Adochi v'ochi, in the interim, leite invita batmina. You should bring a berry or a grape that's about the same size as the growth. Then nigdar ilavai. And then roll it on it. I don't know if that means to smush it on it or to roll it on it. Chivarte le chivarte. You bring a white berry or grape for a white growth. Ve'uchmate le'uchmate. And if it's a red or a colored growth, then you bring that color of grape or berry to rub on it. Amarava hai simta, an abscess, parvanka de ishtahi. That is, again, the harbinger, the forerunner of fever or high fever that's coming. Rabbeinu Hananel says that the simta is a nifucha admumit, is a red growth, swelling, or it's some sort of abscess that has grown out of the body that indicates that there's an infection. And so likely that's why it's a harbinger to the fact that you're going to have fever, is because you have an infection. And as the infection spreads, or the body fights the infection, then there's likelihood that there's going to be fever. Maya Sutta, what is the solution, a medicinal solution for that? The machya shitin it kutle, that you should then snap your fingers 60 times. But the snapping of the fingers is to hit the item. You're going to snap the fingers to hit on this item. Viligare shete ve'erev. Then you should tear it vertically and horizontally in an X way. Ve'ani mile delo chiver reshe. That's as if it hasn't come to a white head. Aval chiver reshe. If it's already come to a white head, late man ba. Then we don't worry about it because that means it's already begun to heal. The white blood cells have begun to heal then. And you shouldn't intervene at that point in time. It's only if it's in the earlier stages that you've got to drain it in order to allow for the infection to exit and for the body to build up defense in order to fight the infection, and then it will work. So that's the solution for an abscess. Rabbi Yaakov Chash Bifika, he had a slit in his rectum. If you look here, Rashi co-translates either Perish Tabat or Pia Tabat, Shobet Arei, Ubalaz Piga, or Figa, which sounds like he's saying that it's a fig, which indicates that it was hemorrhoids and not a slit in the rectum. Orile Rabbi Ami, Vamila Rabbi Asi Orile. So some say that Rabbi Abi instructed him, and some say Rabbi Asi instructed him. Over here, Rashi just says that he instructed him with regards to the Rifu'ah, which means that this is purely a medicinal cure, and that would then have it move away from what we've been discussing until now. Until now, we've been discussing illnesses on Shabbat that have a din of sakana, and therefore you're allowed to intervene and mechalel Shabbat for them. All the items before, we said, even though these things seem to be innocuous, we said the invita was the parvanka, the malachamovit, and we said that the simta was a parvanka of ishta, and we already know from above that ishta has a din of makat chalal, which means that you can be mechalel Shabbat for all of these items or to deal with these items because they are serious. If Rashi is correct over here, then this is a transition in the Gemara, and this is not speaking about Shabbat. This is simply speaking from a perspective of a medical cure. On the other hand, there are many that believe that when they were instructing him, they were giving instructions because this is something that is sakanat nefashot or makat chalal, and you would also be allowed to be mechalel Shabbat for these items. And they don't accept Rashi's statement that it's just about the refuah. They say it's a refuah that you're allowed to be mechalel Shabbat for. What do they tell him to do? Or relate, Shev Bene Ahala Tolano. And you should take 7 pits of, whether this is purple alkali, or the way Rashi has it, it's crimson aloe, Vitsirele Be Chalala, the Be Tzavra, and you should wrap it up. And the way the Rashi describes it over here is that when they used to make their tunics in those days, they had to cut out the area of the neck. So the neck hole that you cut out, the cloth from that piece where you cut out the neck, then you should wrap it up in that. Ilichrech ilavei nira barka. And then on top of that, you should tie a white thread, or the way that Rashi brings it over here was a cattle hair that you should tie it up with. Tamishle, we saw before the word tamish, when Rabbi Meir was running away from the Roman centurion, he went into the Beit Zonot, and then he dipped his finger into the non-kosher pot that uses tamish over there. So tamishle v'natva chirva, you should dip it into white naphtha, velikle, and then you should roast it, ubrader le ilave, and then spread it or sprinkle it on the area. Adahochi v'ochi, while you're preparing this salve or this solution, leite kshita de asno, you should bring the kernels or the pits of the bramble nut, which is basically the fruits of the sneh. They have these seeds inside of them. That's what we're speaking about. Linach pika lahade pika. You should put the slit of that pit opposite the area where there's the slit inside of where the injury is. Vehani mile pika ilo. That's only we're speaking about an external wound where you're able to reach the wound and therefore you can put the sprinkle, the ashes that you created up above on it, or you can place the seed up against it. Pika tata. If it's more internal, I mean it's further up, you should have to know this, that when the Gemara uses the terminology, many of the Rishonim, when they say ila'a, upper, and tata, lower, it's not the way that we use it. We use upper means higher up, and lower means lower down. For them, for instance, in the case of the rectum, something that is higher up is something that is closer to the outside. Something that is further down means more internally to the body. And so that's what it means over here. Pika tata, mai. What do you do for that? Laiti tarba tzvirta. You should bring the fat from a young goat. The lo eftach, that has yet to give birth. Velifshar, and then you should dissolve the fat. Velishtebe, and then insert it there or bring it in internally so that it can reach it. Meaning that the ashes before can only reach external areas. Here, if it's a fat or it's a liquid, you can get it to move internally. Velo, if you don't have that, or if that doesn't work, it's not clear here. Laiti tlat tarfa kro. Bring 3 leaves of the gourds or melons. The miyavshe betula, that were dried out in the shade. Velikle, you should roast them. Velivader ilave, and then spread it on it. Velo, if you don't have that. Laiti mishakte chilzonai. You should bring the shells of snails and use those. Velo, if you don't have that. Mighty mashach kira, should bring a mixture of olive oil and wax. Velinkot bishachake de kitno, and then you should put it on rags of linen, bekaito, that's in the summertime. O the amar gufna besitva, on wool or cotton in the wintertime. And you can use that as the applicator to put it on. Rabbi Bau chash beudne. Rabbi Bau had an earache or an ear infection. Orile Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan told them what to do for it. This was circulating in the Beit Midrash, and they gave him this advice in the Beit Midrash. It wasn't Rabbi Yochanan. My Orilei, so what did they tell him to do? What was the solution they provided to him? Like Abaye says, Amrali Aim. My mother said to me, now Abaye's mother passed away before he was born. He didn't have a mother to go to get this advice. But rather, he had a shivcha, or some woman that was his foster mother, that brought him up, and he speaks about her, Amar Liyim, as if she was his mother. And we find in a number of places in Shas, where Amar Liyim, Abaye describes that this woman who brought him up, gave him advice about certain things, or gave him medicinal cures, or things to eat, or what to do. And so he quotes it, Amar Liyim, Lo ivrei kulyata ela lo udna. The kidney was created for the ear. V'amarava, Amar Liyim minyume asya. Minyume, the physician told me, kulu shakyone kashu l'udna, all types of fluid are bad for the ear, levar mi maya de kulyoto, except for the fluid that comes out of the kidney. Laiti kulyoto de barcha karcho, you should bring the kidney of a bald buck, vilikare sheti verev, and you should tear it crosswise, vilinach am lolo de nura, and then you should put it on coals that are alight, vehanu maya de nafka mine, and the liquid that emanates from the kidney in this situation, lishdinu ve'udne, you should apply it or put it into the ear, lo kirire velo chamime, it shouldn't be cold, it shouldn't be hot, elepshure, should be, whether it's room temperature or warm, tepid, should go into the ear. Velo, if you don't have that, laiti tarba de chipushata gamlanita, you should bring the fat from a cockchafer, which is a type of beetle. Gamlanita, which Rashi says over here, is a thicker, a bigger beetle, which is henten, which is a black beetle. Velifshar, and then you should dissolve the fat. Velishdebe, and then put it into the ear. Velo, if you can't find that. Malye udne mishcha, to fill the ear with oil. Velavit shiv, ptilta dasafsafta. Then you should make 7 wicks out of hay or immature wheat. The late shufta de tuma, And then you should bring, it's not clear here whether it is stalk of the garlic, or the way Rashi says it over here, it's the leaves or the dried out leaves of the garlic. Belita of barka b'chad resha. And then you should put, whether it's a white thread or what we saw before, the cattle hair on one side. Belitle behu nura. And then you should put it alight. You should alight it. Beidach resha motva be'udna. And the other side of the wick should be in the ear. Relative udne lahada nura, and you should lean the ear towards the fire. Vizdaher mizika, and be careful that it's not exposed to the open air or the wind afterwards. What I think they are doing over here is that the wick draws. And so when you put the olive oil into the ear, and then you light the wick from the other side, I'm not sure exactly what the garlic was for in the thread. Maybe that was to stop the flame from moving down the wick. They light the wick, and then the wick draws the oil from the ear that you had placed in before, and that's what keeps the wick alight, is that it's drawing the oil. And the idea would be that while it's drawing the oil out, it would also draw out the other liquids or the other problems that are inside. I don't know if they're creating a suction or a vacuum somehow that then brings out the other liquid. V'nishka chada, v'nena chada. As each wick is consumed, then you take it off and then put in a new wick and you do this 7 times. Lishnach rina, there was a slightly different version of this, which is velo, light the shape tilta bikra. You should bring 7 wicks that are made out of white thread or cattle hair. Bishayfle mishcha da safsata. And then you should soak it in the oil of the, either here it would be nasafsata, would be hay or immature wheat. Although there was another girsa of afarsimu, which would then be balsam wood or balsam oil. Put one end of the wick in the fire. And then one end of the wick in the ear. Put one in and take one, the other one out. And be careful from exposing it to the wind afterwards. Velo, if you don't have that, light a udra denado. You should bring dyed tow cotton. Delo mashkif, which was not either combed, or the way Rashi explains it, was not chavat, they did not hit it, they did not stretch it out and work it. It's much more of a raw type of cotton. Benanach ba, and then place it inside the ear. Belitle the udne, the hari nura, and then tip the ear towards the fire. Umizdayar mizika, and be careful of the air. So that would be an idea also, that the cotton is absorptive, and that it's trying to take out the liquids and using the fire to pull the liquids out as well, or to dry out the liquids that were coming. And all these solutions here, you see something where they're trying to draw liquid out of the ear in order to provide the solution. Velo, if you don't have that, light a gufta de kanya atika bar mea shnit. Bring a hollow tube that is made out of reed that is 100 years old. It was picked 100 years ago. The limleche milcha galalnita, and then you should salt it with the rock salt. Velikle, and then you should roast it or fire it up. Velidbak, and then once you get whatever it comes out of that roasting of the item, the residue that's there, you should place on the ear. Vesimanech, and the sign for all these different solutions over here is retiva, the yabeshta, the retiva. Rashi says it's speaking about all these solutions for the ear, which is we didn't determine what was wrong with the ear. So Rashi says, if the ear is a problem that it is bleaching liquids, or there's a problem with liquids, then you use the dry solutions for the liquids. And the other way around, if the ear is dried out, then you use the liquid solutions for the ear. And so that's the siman, that you use the liquid for the dry and the dry for the liquid. Amar Rabba Bar Zutra, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Malin Oznayim B'Shabbat. You're allowed to raise up the ears on Shabbat. Now, if you look in the description in Rashi, he's definitely not speaking about the ears. What they're speaking about is likely the TMJ joint, which is a joint for the jaw, which is right by the ear. And what it seems that happened over here is that the jaw was dislocated, or the person's TMJ joint locked on Shabbat. And what you're allowed to do, lifting the ears, means to reinsert, put the jaw back in place, or to get the TMJ to unlock. So that's what it means, Malin Ba'uznaim. They use that as the expression because that is the place that's right by there. But it means that they're trying to put the jaw back in place. Tanya Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Biyad Avalo Bisam. You can do it manually with your hand, but you can't do it through using some sort of salve or medicine to do it. Igadami Bisam Avalo Biyad. There's another version that says you should do it medicinally, but not do it by hand. My Taimo. What's the reason that you shouldn't do it by hand? Mizraf Zarif. The word Mizraf Zarif in other places means to be scratched up, that it causes scratching or it causes some sort of lesion. And that means that you would be making a chabura on Shabbat. Because Rashi in Yevamot translates Mizraf Zarif, Oseh chabura, like he does here. Lishnachrina Mizraf Zarif Mala Nefach. It causes swelling or soreness, which is true by the TMJ. If you have TMJ, or what's called lockjaw, once they reinsert it, or when your jaw actually dislocates and they put it back in, there's a tremendous soreness that's left afterwards. So they say do it by salve, because that'll gently reinsert it, versus by manually, which will be a much more sudden action that will leave you in that pain or soreness afterwards. Whether, again, that's a soreness or causes some sort of bleeding, and so that either one of those could be the interpretation over here, although obviously he's favoring chabura over here because of the issue of chilul Shabbat. Amrav Zutra Batuvya, Amrav. Ayin Shemerda. If you have an eye that rebelled, Rashi over here says that it means that the eye is popping out of its socket. It seems like it's going to explode. Mutar lekochla b'Shabbat. You're allowed to color it or have an applicator be put in the eye in order to solve the problem on Shabbat. Sover minei, hani milehu, deshechakeitz manim me'etmol. They thought when he heard this that it meant that you had the medicine already prepared from yesterday. And the only question is, can you apply it on Shabbat or not? Which means that you're only violating an Isur Derabanan, not an Isur Doraita. The Isur Derabanan is the use of medicine on Shabbat, the application of medicine on Shabbat. Zera atu shechakatz manmanim. But over here, the Smamanim were already taken care of before, which means that there's no Isur Doraita with the Isur Derabanan. So in order to solve this problem with the eye, you're allowed to violate an Isur Derabanan. Aval, mishchat b'Shabbat, v'etuyi derech reshut rabim, lo. But to actually crush the item on Shabbat, or to bring it through the reshut rabim, which would be a violation to Oraita, that would not be allowed to solve this problem. Amaleihu mirabbanan, v'rab Yaakov Shimei. One of the Rabbanon said to him, and Rabbi Yaakov was his name, I heard this memra of Rabbi Yehuda, Ilu Mishchak, B'Shabbat, V'atuyah Derech Reshut Rabbim Mutar, that Rabbi Yehuda would allow you even to violate the Din D'Oraita in order to take care of the eye in this situation. We'll see in a second why that is. The Gemara believed that there was something significant about the eye, and therefore you're allowed to violate it even on a level of D'Oraita. Rabbi Yehuda, Sharla Mitchal Eina B'Shabto. And here is the view of Rabbi Yehuda that he's saying, I had the word of Rabbi Yehuda explained. Rabbi Yehuda is a Talmud of Rav. So here you have the original memra from Rav that allows Kukla B'Shabbat and the Ayin Shemer Da. Then we have the explanation by Rabbi Yaakov of Rabbi Yehuda's statement. And here's Rabbi Yehuda's statement that you're allowed also to color your eye on Shabbat. Amar Lehu Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Man Sait Yehuda, Machal Shavet. Anybody who listens to Rabbi Yehuda is Mechalal Shabbat. Meaning that he thought it was completely incorrect. And now, according to what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, not only can you violate a din derabanan, you can violate a din d'oraita in order to deal with this issue. And he says, anybody who follows this psak of Rabbi Yehuda is in violation of Shabbat, is a mechalal Shabbat. V'sov chash v'enei, and as serendipity had it, midah keneged midah, that Shmuel bar Yehuda came down with a eye ache or a problem with his eye on Shabbat. Shalach lei shari o asir. He said to Rabbi Yehuda, can I deal with it or can I not deal with it on Shabbat? He said back to him, the kulei ame shari, anybody else, it's mutar to deal with it on Shabbat. The didach, asir. For you, it is asur, because you paskin that it's mechalo Shabbat. So enochanami, had you listened to my psak, you would have been fine. But you objected to my psak, and you basically made it kechaticha asura to yourself, because you paskin that it's mechalo Shabbat. So for you, you can't do it, even though I give a psak of heter. V'chi mididehu, and now Rabbi Yehuda chastises him and says, you think that I made this up, and that's why I was saying it? Damar Shmuel, I got it from my Rebbe Shmuel. You were questioning my psak in this matter. It came from my Rebbe Shmuel, it's not from me, and therefore you should never have questioned the psak. But now you put yourself in a bind where you can't solve the problem because you paskin against me in this matter. Hayamto, Dahava Bey Mar Shmuel. There was this maidservant in the house of Shmuel. The Kadchola Eina B'Shabto. Her eye became inflamed or swollen on Shabbat. Tzavcho, she was screaming because of the pain. And there was nobody who was listening to her. They thought she was just a hypochondriac, that she was just complaining. It was painful, but it wasn't something that was so serious. Paka eina. In the end, she lost her eye. It exploded or something happened to the eye that was extremely damaging. The next day, Shmuel went out and was doresh to public. Ayin shemerda mutar lekochlo b'shabbat. An ayin that was, quote-unquote, rebelling, that was swollen or was something was happening that was causing it to be in tremendous pain, you can deal with it on Shabbat. You can apply the medicine on Shabbat. Now, kukla in general is very particular to eye makeup that was used by them. It's called kukla because the applicator was called a makol. So here when they're speaking about a kukla, it could be that they're speaking about the makeup because that makeup also contained within it items that would help the eye. But in addition, they're talking really about the applicator, that they put in whatever it is and put the application onto the eye on Shabbat. My taima, what's the reason that it is permitted? This is the origins of this halakha. We saw it in the name of Rav. Now we see it in the name of Shmuel. We saw Rabbi Yehuda quote it. Now we saw Rabbi Yaakov say that Rabbi Yehuda meant that it was even de'oraita, which means that you're allowed to violate Shabbat de'oraita. Here is the reason for it. Shuraini de'ena ve'uvneta de'liba talu. Because the eye is connected to the heart. The way that Rashi explains it over here is, Talu ma'ora ha'ayin, the brightness or the light of the eye or the seeing, mi'urin v'achuzin. They are integrally connected and tied into tar peshei ha'leiv, the fat of the heart, or it could be the arteries of the heart, and therefore there's a direct connection between them. The Balei HaTosafot quote Rashi and says, v'li nira, he says that I think this means, riyata ayin talu b'habanat ha'leiv, one's ability to see, discern, and interpret what they see is connected to the heart, which is the pasuk that's brought by tzitzit, and the chastisement of the meraglim, which is lo taturu acharei levavchem, acharei neichem. Don't go after your heart and your eyes. There's a connection between what you see and what's in your heart. Your heart colors or biases what you see. So there is this deep connection between the heart and the eye, or in essence, one's mental state is connected to their eyesight, or you could say it this way, that the eye nerve goes directly back into the brain. And so anything that would affect the eye could then lead to something that would affect the brain immediately, which is the center of thought, meaning habanat halev doesn't necessarily mean the heart, it means understanding or one's interpretation, and that means that there's some direct connection between the eye and other vital organs of the body. And that gives you the permission to be mechalo Shabbat de'oraita. And that leads us to the halachot that derive from what we were speaking about over here. We'll see a couple of them now, and then we'll give a summary of that, which is kigomai. Which type of eye ailments are subject to this rule? So Amar Rav Yehuda kigom. Their examples are rira, Rashi quotes as being pus or some sort of liquid is emanating from the eye. Ditza, which Rashi interprets as being something that is piercing or needling type of pain. You can see that in Rabbeinu Hanano, he says, Gilo no atzim davar ve'ena. It's as if they're pushing something into the eye. Whether that's piercing or pressure on the eye. Damo is an inflamed eye or a congested eye. Dimato is an eye that is giving off a lot of tears. Kidcha is an inflamed or a heated eye. Utchilat uchla, or the beginning of any sickness. Although it seems from the Rabbeinu Hananel that he thinks that you need all of these items combined, and that's what's called ayin shemerda. So it's the combination of the excretions that are coming from the eye that include the pain and all these other associated symptoms that makes it into ayin shemerda. Dafuke, what does that come to exclude? He gave you a pretty comprehensive list of everything that could go wrong with your eye. So what is that, lafuke? What is not included in that list? Sof uchla, the end, meaning that it's already in remission, or tzucheina, to improve your light of your eye or your eyesight. If it's simply an improvement, it's an upgrade, it's not solving a problem, then those below, those aren't included in these dispensations. Dispensations are only when the eye is problematic, and again, at the beginning of the ailment, if you're already in the tail of the ailment, or it's something where you're just doing it to maybe even preventative, or even improvement of the eye, that is not allowed. So now, over here, we have a halacha that says that when it comes to certain sakanot, you're allowed to violate Shabbat. Clearly, whether sakanat ifashot, you can violate Shabbat, even at a doraita level. What the Gemara is entertaining over here is that there are other items that are precursors to sakanat ifashot, and those allow you to also to violate Shabbat at a doraita level. And then beyond that, the Gemara now says that there's something called sakanat eifer, where you have a limb that is at risk, and that limb being at risk is also a priority enough, or a sakanat nefashot enough, that we allow you to violate Shabbat d'oraita in order to deal with it. So for instance, over here, the I, which is technically only a sakanat efer, nevertheless, we allow you to violate Shabbat, bidoraita, because of the implications of sakanat efer, that it can have repercussions that are life-threatening. And given that, you're allowed to, for the sakanat efer, violate Shabbat, deoraita. The other side of that, and that's the havamina of the Gemara over here, is if it was simply sakanat efer, where there was no ramifications or repercussions that would be sakanat nefashot, then you would have a right to violate dinei derabbanan, not dinei doraita, which is the secondary dispensation on Shabbat. Sakanat nefashot is clear that you can violate doraita, and even a Jew should be doing it on the doraita level to show people that you are mechalel Shabbat for dinim deoraita. Again, it wasn't so clear to people many times, and it is told about the story of the Chashmonaim or the Maccabim. When they fought originally against the Greeks, they used to lay down their weapons every Shabbat because they didn't think that this issue could be violating Shabbat. And they used to get killed every Shabbat till they realized that they were allowed to be Mechalel Shabbat in order to fight the battles against the Greeks. But a similar idea here with terms of medicinal issues, and again, it's still a problem today, that any time there's a Sakanat Nefashot or it's a fake Sakanat Nefashot, one should be the first to deal with these issues. Yisrael, Mechalel Shabbat, you do anything you need for the person. When it comes to Sakanat Eiver, that is not Sakanat Nefashot, then you have a right to violate Dinei Derabbanan, which means you can either do Amir La'akum, or you can do things like Shchika using medicinal cures, which are only in Yisrael Derabbanan, or you can have a Jew do it Derech Shinui, and you can violate Dinei Derabbanan. The Ramban adds onto that, based on other sources in Shas, that includes tsar gadol, the person's in tremendous pain, or in issues that are affect choli kol haguf, so that affects the entire body. All those items you have permission in order to violate dinei derabanan. The last one is if you have a michush. If someone has discomfort or slight pain, then you don't have a right to violate Shabbat, and you have to live with the pain or live with the discomfort and not do anything to violate Shabbat, not derabanan, not the oraita. So that are the three categories in Shabbat. The first of which is no treatment. You must follow all of the dinim of Shabbat. The next one is generally associated with no fel de mita, someone who has to stay in bed. They're bedridden because of whatever it is. And again, that could be sakanat eiver. That could be choli kol haguf or tsar gadol. That would incapacitate the individual for that time period. And those are allowed to violate dinei derabanan. And then there's things that rise to the level of sakana or safek sakana, where you can violate dinim d'oraita. Now, it's always hard to discern. The cholek gets to make a certain declaration about himself. Doctors can override only in favor of treating the cholek, but if the cholek himself makes the declaration, we generally believe the cholek. But as I heard from Rav Asher Weiss, he says that on Yom Kippur, when anybody comes into him, they say, I'm not feeling well. He says, nobody's feeling well on Yom Kippur. Everybody doesn't feel well on Yom Kippur. How do you determine when somebody's not feeling well and when they're really not feeling well? And that's the hardest thing to discern when you're dealing with people, is people have different thresholds of pain, different thresholds of what's really problematic or not, and how much they're willing to complain or not complain about it. And therefore, sometimes it's hard to know where those thresholds are, where those lines are. So know that there's also a dispensation in general that we deal with today, which is, for instance, based on the Gemara, if someone, Chas V'Shalom, broke their leg or their arm on Shabbat, technically, you would not be able to treat it because it's really sakanat eiver, not sakanat nefashot. Nevertheless, we still today treat those items on Shabbat and our mechalel Shabbat to deal with those items. Number one is that there are rare instances where it can lead to sakanat nefashot, and therefore we deal with it. The other thing is that we speak about the mental toll it will take on the person if they're left in this state. If it's not treated, then it can lead permanent damage to the individual, which have far-reaching repercussions to the individual beyond just the broken arm and the broken leg. And for that reason, we allow treatment of these items on Shabbat, despite the fact that Sakanat Eiver really only allows for dispensations in Dinei Derabbanan. Nevertheless, you can speak to whatever posek and find out in situations, but in those situations, generally, we are apt to treat because of the long-ranging implications of not treating these items. All right, so now we have a couple more examples of treatments here. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Tzibora Udecharzei Silva. If a person gets stung by a wasp, or he was punctured by a thorn, Visamto, and that's what we saw before on the bottom of Amud Aleph, was a simta, which is an abscess. Udekaivle Eina, or he has an eyeache. V'ate Ilave Ishto, or he has fever. Kulu bebani sakanto. For any of these individuals, the bathhouse would be a danger. And that is because the bathhouse is heated water or hot, and therefore going into the hot would be bad for these issues. Chama lechama, besilka letzino. Chama lechama, Rashi says chama is a radish. You eat something that is hot or sharp. Lechama, for things that are hot. Besilka, and you eat, whether it's beets or spinach. Letzino, for things that are cold or problems of cold. For things where a person has the chills or he has some sort of cold, then he should have a cold item. Bichilufa, sakanto. And the opposite would be problematic. And you can see here in the Masoret HaShas on the side, as well as in the Haggadah Bach, that they both bring from the Oruch, that the Girsa over here was silka lezika, that beets or trident are good for zika, which means wind, which is shehibi kreso shaladam. Person who has gas pains or has gas within them, this was beneficial to that, so they don't have a lashon of letzina for cold, but rather for the zika. And you can see that Girsa in the Rabbeinu Chanana, where he says, chama lechama, perish v'silka lezika. And so he has also the Girsa lezika. Chamime l'akrava. For the bite of a scorpion, a person should have hot items or warm items, meaning that he should soak it in hot water. V'krire l'zibura, like we saw before, when it comes to a wasp thing, you should soak it in cold water, not in hot water. V'chilufa sakanto. Doing the opposite would endanger the individual. Rash says, chamime l'akrava means that you should soak it in the hot water. But if you look in the Rabbeinu Chanana, he says, that you should feed the person warm items. And in the other case, where it's the zibora, he says that you should feed them cold items. So the Rabbeinu Chanana thinks that these are items that you're ingesting, whereas Rashi thinks these are items where you're soaking the item either in hot or cold water. Chamime l'silva, you have to soak a puncture by a thorn in hot water, which would go against what we said before. Before he said that if you had a thorn prick, then you should not go to the bathhouse, which is hot. Over here it says, chamime l'silva is okay. So Rashi notes over here, that's a difference between putting that particular aver into hot water versus putting your whole body into hot water. Whole body into hot water would be detrimental. Just putting that aver into the hot water would be beneficial. Bikrire lechaspinito, and cold water is good for, it looks like a breakout of acne on one's face or pimples on the face. V'chilufa sakanto. And the opposite, again, is dangerous. Chala lisibori. Vinegar is good for bloodletting. O monini litanito. And small fish or fish brine is good at the end of a fast. V'chilufa sakanto. And the opposite is dangerous. So one should not be eating fish when they are getting their blood let, and one should not be having vinegar right after a fast. Tachle visibora sakanto. Cress and bloodletting don't go together, they're dangerous. Ishta visibora sakanto. If you have a fever and bloodletting, they don't go together, that is dangerous. Cave ena visibori. One has an eyeache and bloodletting, sakanto is dangerous. Sheni ledag dam. The day after you have eaten fish, you bloodlet. Sheni ladam, dog. And the day after you had bloodletting, dog, you should eat fish. So on the day itself, we just said before, it's dangerous to have fish together with the bloodletting. So the fish the day before and fish the day afterwards are good. Shlishi lo sakanto. If you have the fish on the third day, that's also dangerous. So you only can have it on the day before and the day afterwards. You can't have it 2 days afterwards, which is the third day from the time that you bloodlet. That would be dangerous to have fish in those situations. Okay, we're going to stop here for 5 lines down, and we'll continue a little more tomorrow with some of these medicinal cures.